Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this is another of those Bhakti Vaibhava classes where we are dealing with a number of verses and are trying to get a better understanding. We're dealing with Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 8, prayers by Queen Kunti, text 32 to 36 or 5. Verses. So what I'll do is we'll first read the 5 verses and then we'll just dip into them, so to speak, in the purports. Otherwise it's not possible. Kechit ahurajam jatam Punya slokasya kirtaye Yado priyasyan bhavaye Malayasye vachannanam Kichit. Someone, aho, says, ajam, the unborn, jatam, being born, punyaslokasya, of the great pious king, kirtaye, for glorifying, yado, of King Yadu, priyasya, of the dear, Anbhavaye, in the family of Malayasya, Malaya Hills, Eva S. Chandanam, Sandalwood. Translation. Some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings, and others say that he's born to please Krishna, to please King Yadu, one of our dearest devotees. You appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya Hills. And then the next text. Apare vasudevasya devakyam yachito byagat ajastam asyaksemasya vadayacha suradvisam. Others say that since both Vasudeva and Devaki prayed for you, you've taken your birth as their son. Undoubtedly, you are unborn, yet you take your birth for their welfare and to kill those who are envious of the demigods. Text 34. Bharavataranayan ye bhuvo nava ivodado sedanchaburi barena jato yet mabuvartita. Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. Bhavesmin klishyamananam avijya karma karma bi sravana smaranar hani karishyan itakechana. And yet others say that you appear to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worshipping, and so on, in order that the conditioned souls suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. And text 36. Srinvanti kayante grinanti abhiknasaha Smaranti nandanti tavehitam janaha taiva pasyanti achirena tavakam. Bhava Pravahu Paramam Padam Bhujam. O Krishna, those who continuously hear and chant and remember and repeat your transcendental activities or take pleasure in others, doing so certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. So in verse number 32, which is on the board, we find Ajam Jatam. Aja. Krishna is known as the unborn Krishna, and yet it is said he is Jatam, yet he took birth. So that's confusing, or that's amazing. Of course, we understand when we study the 10th canto of Bhagavatam that the birth of Krishna was not at all an ordinary birth. That, first of all, Krishna was not conceived like an ordinary child. But we may remember that Vasudev had a consciousness of pure goodness, and that the Lord manifested in his consciousness of pure goodness. And then from the heart of Vasudev, the Lord was transferred to the heart of Devaki, and this process is known as Diksha. So it was stated. So through that process of transmitting Divya Jnanam, or Diksha, realized within the heart by Vasudev, received by Devaki in the same consciousness. Then the Lord manifested within her womb, and she showed signs of pregnancy and so on. Then, after that, when the Lord finally did take birth, he appeared first fully dressed in the form, in a four-armed form, helmet, dhoti, ornaments, and so on, before Devaki and Vasudev. So it was not an ordinary child birth. And then upon their, on the request of Devaki, he took the form of a child. Because she wanted to protect him. She thought, like, when Kamsa will find out that he's Vishnu, she will surely kill him. But when he's disguised like a child, then maybe he has a chance. Anyway, a little bit of yoga maya, maybe. Possibly. Not fully understanding the reality. But still, within that covered experience of yoga maya, reaching logical conclusions. That's interesting how, you know, like devotees, when they miss to see the logic of Krishna being the Supreme Lord, still they have their logic. As a child, he will be better protected, as if children were protected from Kamsa. But anyway, so Krishna's so-called birth is not at all a birth. But then again, the Lord appears again and again in so many forms. And in all these different forms, we do not always hear that it is an immaculate conception, as in the case of Krishna. Rather, we see that possibly, maybe, whatever way the Lord was conceived, we just have no information. So it looks like the Lord is born again and again in so many different forms. But yet, Srila Prabhupada is making that point at the end of the purport. He's saying, the conclusion is that the Lord is ever unborn like the sun. And yet he appears as the sun rises on the Easter horizon. As the sun is never the sun of the Easter horizon, so the Lord is no one's son, but he's the father of everything that be. Krishna is the eternal Supreme Personality of Godhead, and always in that position. Krishna is performing many pastimes simultaneous, just like when Krishna is coming from the spiritual world to the material world, he brings the spiritual world with him. But it's not that in the spiritual world, on the fridge, there's a little note where it says, "Gone to the material world, we'll be right back," right? Something like that. It's not that Krishna is absent in the spiritual world, you know, during the time that he's here in Vrindavan in the material world. No, he's also there in the spiritual world performing all his eternal pastimes. So those are not at all interrupted. And in fact, Krishna is performing his pastimes in many universes simultaneous, and we hear from our acharyas that the pastimes of Krishna are going on, different pastimes are going on simultaneously. Like right now, in some universe, Krishna is killing Agasura. In another universe, he is lifting Govardhan. In another universe, he's dancing on the hoots of Kaliya. And all these things are going on right now, just now. So, yeah, you are confused. Go ahead. Yeah. Right. Yeah, but the acharyas are also saying that as Krishna moves on, simultaneously, and he moves on like the sun, he moves on to other locations, but simultaneously also in other universes, Krishna is also already there, and he's expanded himself in so many forms. So that's also going on. Yeah. So what you say is going on, and what I say is also going on at the same time. So Krishna is bigger than the two of us can conceive of together. And even like if everyone helps us, we still want capture the full opulences of Krishna. Sada is Varyapurna, who is full of all opulences. I guess since Pandu broke the ice, I think that's a good idea. Since it's supposed to be Bhakti Vaibhav, we may as well take feedback from the audience as they feel inspired. Yeah. So, thanks, Pandu. Krishna must have inspired him. So here it is in the first verse. It says that some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings. Punya slokasya kirtaye. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also mentions that this Punya Sloka refers to Yudhisthira. It was a name of Yudhisthira, Punya Sloka, the one who was famous for his piety. So the verse can sometimes be explained a little different. It can mean many pious kings that appeared in the dynasty of King Yadu, or it can refer to Yudhisthira in particular. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur likes to emphasize that because the spirit of the prayers of Kunti Devi is they're not just philosophical prayers trying to ascertain the nature of the Supreme Lord and how he is manifesting himself in this world. There is something more behind it. We are here reading text 32 to 36, and with that we are going to end Kunti Devi's prayers. And in text 37, what's coming out is that Krishna is about to leave. He's about to return to Dwarka. He's about to leave Hastinapur. And somehow or other, Kunti Devi is trying to get him to stay. So within the prayers, she's also reminding Krishna of the family relationship. She's also reminding Krishna that, like, for example, we saw yesterday description of how he's the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, and yet he is bound by Yasoda. And so what's going on there? Although, yes, he is that Supreme Lord, he has all those divine opulences and so on, but at the same time, he is has another unique quality, that he's bound by family relationships or by intimate relationships with his devotees. Therefore, right, since you were bound by Yasoda, then now it's our turn, kind of. She's hinting that. Yeah? She's hinting that, like, also think of our relationship. So that's an underlying theme in the prayers, that's behind the prayers, because her desire to somehow or other convince Krishna to stay. So therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's point that Punya Sloka is referring to Yudhisthira sort of highlights that point a little bit, that point of the family relationship. But the verse can also be translated in a broader way, that he has appeared. After all, the Punya Sloka can also be taken to be part of the second part of the verse, which is speaking about the tree, the sandalwood tree in the Malaya forest. Right? So when you speak about Krishna as a sandalwood tree in the Malaya forest, then you're looking, the Malaya forest then obviously represents the dynasty. And the tree obviously refers then to him as a member of the Yadu dynasty. So therefore, in that context, one can take Punya Slokasya to mean all the pious kings that took their birth in that Yadu dynasty. Like that, we can see a dual translation. A note here on the purport is that Prabhupada, as we see, sort of in the middle, he says, in the age of Kali, in most cases the rulers are impious and therefore the citizens are also continuously unhappy. But in the case of democracy, the impious citizens themselves elect their representative to rule over them, and therefore they cannot blame anyone for their unhappiness. Maharaj Nala was also celebrated as a great pious king, but he had no connection with Lord Krishna. So here, you know, if we now look for a second at the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it is said, Punya Sloka here refers to Yudhisthira, since he was famous by that name and at that time. Punya Sloka Nalo Raja Puja Sloka Yudhisthira Punya Sloka, Prabhupada continues, means, or Vishwanath continues, Punya Sloka means King Nala, another famous pious person. Yeah. So, Prabhupada says, in the purport, he takes what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote. And he said, Maharaj Nala was also celebrated as a great pious king, but he had no connection with Lord Krishna. Therefore, Maharaj Yudhisthira is meant here to be glorified by Lord Krishna. So it's interesting because we can... I remember that quite some years ago, there was a seminar here which was called Unzipping Prabhupada's Purports. And the idea of that, comparing Prabhupada's purports to a zip file, which actually indicating that Prabhupada's purports were full of statements of others, and that they in a way were not Prabhupada's purports. So, and the scholarly devotee was questioning, like, well, you know, so why we're giving so much credit to Prabhupada? Of course, that was the little mistake he made. We say that's exactly the reason why we give credit to Prabhupada. Right? Exactly for that reason we give credit to Prabhupada, and it shows how faithful he is to the acharyas, and that he's not like carried away by his own brilliance, and that he has some amazing insight. No, he is just Yes, he has insights, and he offers these insights, certainly. But he also faithfully includes the statements of the Acharyas. So that is, that faithfulness is there throughout the Bhagavatam. And just yesterday, I was remembering the statement where Prabhupada said, actually, I haven't translated Bhagavatam. He said, actually, that he did it. And he pointed at Pradyumna, his Sanskrit editor. His translations. He did the translations. And because Prabhupada was not so concerned with the translations of the verses. For Prabhupada, the purports were more important than the verses. Tamal Krishnamurti also speaks about that. And that's interesting because, you know, I mean, the verse is the original text. And the purport is supposed to be the explanation of the text. So how can you... Sounds a little bit... the purports are more important than the text. It sounds a little bit awkward, right? But if you think about it in another way, then it's obvious, because if we would not have these purports, we wouldn't really capture the essence of the text. We would get maybe 5%, 10%, right? If we were lucky, sometimes nothing at all. Yeah, if you go through like the allegorical pastimes of Puranjan, well, you know, thanks to the purports, we can figure it out. You know, otherwise it's so symbolic. I mean, you just can't make sense of it. So the purports are indeed more important than the verses. So, okay, that's a comment I wanted to make. We'll go to text 33. Apare vasudevasya devakyam jachitu byagat ajas tvam asyaksim asya vadaya chasura dvisam. Others say that since both Vasudeva and Devaki prayed for you, you have taken birth as their son. Undoubtedly, you are unborn, yet you take your birth for their welfare and to kill those who are envious of the demigods. Purport, it is also said that Vasudeva and Devaki in their previous birth as Sutapa and Prishni underwent a severe type of penance to get the Lord as their son. And as a result of such austerities, the Lord appeared as their son. It's already declared in the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord appears for the welfare of all the people of the world and to vanquish the asuras or the materialistic atheist. Well, so this point is obviously there, that Vasudeva, that Krishna also appeared for Vasudeva in Devaki. All these verses of Kunti Devi are true, each single one of them, giving a reason for Krishna's appearance. And we can see that there is a multifaceted reasons for Krishna's appearance, and that these verses are highlighting that. And as such, if I just jump to text 35 for a moment. And yet others say that you appear to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worshipping, and so on, in order that the conditioned soul suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, that's the real reason. That's the real reason why the Lord appeared. Right? That's the main reason. That's the principal reason. No. Reawaken the devotional attitude in devotees, and to reawaken hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping in all the conditioned souls, and then bring them back to the spiritual world, to reclaim all the conditioned souls. That's the real reason. But all these, that is the principal reason. Krishna, it is translated in the commentary is translated as the real reason, but I would prefer to say the principal reason, right? Because it would be because the other reasons are also very real, yeah? Very real. Bharavatara nayanye bhuvunava ivodado siddhancha buribarena jatu yatma bhuvartita. That was text 34. Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. And it's a fact, we remember, Brahma, Bhumi came, Brahma went to the ocean with all the demigods, the ocean of milk, prayed to the Lord, and then in answer to those prayers, the Lord said, soon I will appear, now all of you take birth in the Yadu dynasty. So that's also a fact. That's a fact. That's completely a bona fide reason. But we also understand that in a way it's external. It's not the ultimate cause, right? It's an external cause. The prayer is considered an external cause. The example of external cause and ultimate cause is if I stand outside and take a brick in my hand, and I throw it to a window here in the temple room, and during the class, then certainly that will wake up everyone. I've gone through that experience actually once in The Hague. In the middle of the Sunday feast lecture, two bricks actually, flew through the windows. Glass everywhere. It was the neighbors, because the father of the house had passed on, and the dead body was lying on the table in the house, and the whole family was sitting around having a mourning session. And in the middle of that, we were joyfully chanting and dancing. And that's sort of, they couldn't hack it on that particular day. For once, be quiet at this time. Anyway, the immediate cause is obviously the hand that has thrown the brick through the window. But then there's like further, more remote causes. Right, more remote causes. A remote cause in this case in The Hague was the dead body lying on the table. That was a more remote cause. The grief that they experienced was the remote cause. So we can see that immediate causes like the austerities of Sutapa and Prishni, or of the prayers of Lord Brahma, right, were certainly adding to the appearance of the Lord. But the principal reason itself is that although Krishna is known as Atmaram, or satisfied within himself, it is mentioned in the fourth canto that still the Lord experienced something lacking, some incompleteness. So he is fully satisfied within himself, but there is some incompleteness. And that incompleteness is that there are living beings who are separated from him in the material world. Because in that way, the ocean of transcendental bliss is not complete. It is described sometimes as Premamritambo, that ocean of transcendental bliss. And the ocean of transcendental bliss is made up of Krishna in so many unlimited varieties of moods, and in relationships with so many different devotees. Akila Rasamrita Murti, Krishna is that form who maintains all these different relationships with all kinds of devotees. And all these devotees are having loving exchanges with Krishna. And the love of the devotees is awakening love in Krishna. And the love of Krishna is awakening love in the devotees. And this reciprocation is going on. So if there's some devotees not part of that ocean of transcendental love, then there's something missing. I mean, it could be there's still an element, there's still one personality is not living up to his potential and just adding to the love in that exchange. So this is the incompleteness that Krishna is experiencing when there are living beings who are in a conditioned state, or a state of Nityabada, a fallen state. When Prabhupada discusses Nityabada in his CC lectures, which refer to the particular verse where Nityasiddha and Nityabada positions are discussed, the Nityasiddha, the eternally liberated soul, and Nityabada, the eternally conditioned soul, then Prabhupada says, yes, and then the eternally conditioned soul can return to his original position. So he makes it quite clear there that although we say Nityabada, which is translated as eternally fallen, in the same sentence he says, and then return to their original position, which is interesting, because sometimes this Nityabada is interpreted, we were always fallen, and you know, like anadi bahir mukha since time immemorial, and only then, now, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, can we become liberated and go back to Godhead, and so on. That, of course, poses a theological problem, now that we're on the fall of the jiva, the favorite topic of a lot of people, that who somehow or other can't resist it, like, well, you know, like certain insects are drawn to certain things. They have to go to that topic. The problem is, if we were always fallen, then it relieves us from responsibility. Then we were not responsible. Yeah? So then, it's not my fault. I know. I did all these abominable activities, but what chance did I have? If someone takes his birth in a totally antisocial family and has been kicked around like a football between his father and mother, right, instead of being treated with loving affection, can we blame such a person for becoming a criminal? In any court of law, right, the lawyer would immediately bring up the extenuating circumstances, me lord, and all that, right? So that's the point, that if we were already fallen from the onset, well, you know, then we were not pure to start off with, we were fallen, so then how can we be blamed for the mistakes that we made? Not fully. Then we're not fully responsible, you see. But if we did voluntarily, for some mysterious reason, and we will not entertain that part of the fall of the jiva today that we say for a rainy day. Today, no rain. Sorry, those things are only discussed on rainy days. That part, why the jiva fell, is interesting, but if we came here by our own choice, then we are responsible for the whole material world. And this is our theology. Krishna does not desire the material world. It's not that Krishna is responsible for the creation of the material world. He's doing it like an engineer. Right, but we are the ultimate cause, not Krishna. Krishna is the immediate cause. He is the builder, but the ultimate cause is the jiva, and that's why we have this material world. And Krishna Kshetra Prabhu reminded us yesterday of the Ahastani Sahastanam verse, Jivo Jivasya Jivanam, where one living being is food for another. And there is one planet in this universe where there's an ocean of worms that are all eating each other. Yeah. So, just to kind of... And, well, you know, And in another sense, the whole universe is an ocean of worms that are eating each other. Okay, take that under your belt. And then we can continue to understand Krishna's sentiment. It is, now it makes also more sense that Krishna has a sentiment that he wants us to return, because it wasn't his choice in the first place. Therefore, text 35. And yet others say that you appear to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worshipping, and so on, in order that the conditioned souls suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. Therefore, Vishwanath emphasizes it, because this is Krishna's deepest desire in relation to the conditioned souls. It's his deepest desire when it comes to his appearance. Then I'll jump to text 36. Srinvanti gayanti grinanti abhikna saha smaranti nandanti tavetam janaha taeva pasyanti achirena tavakam bhava pravahu paramam padam bhujam. O Krishna, those who continuously hear, chant, and repeat your transcendental activities, or take pleasure in others doing so, certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. And it's interesting that Prabhupada really gets into this verse. He writes the longest purport on this verse and really emphasizes this hearing about Krishna. And this hearing and chanting as the means to... The reason is that the first item, quoting from the purport, sravana, is very important. If hearing is from the right sources, it acts very quickly. Generally, people hear from unauthorized persons. Such unauthorized persons may be very learned by academic qualifications, but because they do not follow the principles of devotional service, hearing from them becomes a sheer waste of time. Sometimes the texts are interpreted fashionably to suit their own purposes. There was a dentist in Mumbai who said that Krishna was like a dentist and Arjuna was like a painter, like a patient. Guess what he was doing? Business. Therefore, first, one should select a competent and bona fide speaker and then hear from him. When the hearing process is perfect and complete, the other processes become automatically perfect in their own way. So here, this hearing process is not an intellectual process. Although the intellect is certainly part of the process, one is certainly try to apply his intelligence and try to understand reason and arguments that are given for Krishna's qualities, Krishna's nature, Krishna's appearance, and so on, his name, fame, form, and pastimes. But the hearing is different. It's of a different nature. Srinvata svakata Krishna punya sravana kirtanam ridi antastohi abhidrani vidunati suritsatam. The vidunuti is a utensil in India being used in just before the winter. These men walk through the streets and they have a big bow and they play on this bow. And it's loud, extremely loud. And they walk through the streets and they think, like, what kind of music is this? The purpose of this bow is, everybody knows, aha, yes, yes, just before the winter. They call him in their house. They pull out all the old quilts. He opens them up and plays his bow over the cotton. And the sound vibration fluffs up that cotton that is caked and packed in that quilt. And it sort of becomes loosened up. Right? So in this way, all this dirt that is caked in our heart and pressed down by like piles of sinful activities on top of more sinful activities, on top of more, and the weight of all those sinful activities pressing it down and making it very thick and hard layer, which even when brushing doesn't come off, just like coal, stays black, right? One of those pots that had like been charcoaled and burned, and you scrape and still not cleaning. Chetu darpanam marjanam bhavamaha devakniyane vapanam. This transcendental sound penetrates, shakes it up, and then removes all these impurities. But not only that, right? And it is explained. Aparapta phalam papam kutam bijam phalam mukam kramaneva praliyata Vishnu bhakti tatmanam in the Vishnu Purana, that this aparapta karma, this unmanifest, all these reactions that are stored within the heart, it diminishes the stock, it diminishes the inclination, it diminishes the fruits of that karma. Right. So in this way, in all respects, the influence of that karma is being diminished by hearing and chanting. Srila Prabhupada, it's interesting, puts the focus there of these four verses. It's like not that he's in disagreement with Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, that Krishna's main reason was clearly to deliver the conditioned souls, and that point, and that was the main reason for his appearance. But Prabhupada simply is not just making the point. Prabhupada is doing the work, right? Prabhupada is doing the work. He's not just making the point of like the main business of Krishna is to reclaim the conditioned soul. Prabhupada is doing it, right? He's doing it. Just like Prabhupada said to that letter of Jayapataka Maharaj, you know, where it said that Prabhupada writes this letter to Jayapataka Maharaj, where he writes that Bhaktivinoda Thakur predicted, the prediction of Lord Chaitanya was there that it would spread to every town and village. Bhaktivinoda Thakur predicted that all the people from all over the world would come to Mayapur and chant the holy name. Prabhupada said, the prediction is there, right? Now, let us make it come true. Right? Let us make it come true. So, you know, we often have these things, prediction. Let's see if it's going to happen. Oh, I wonder, 21st December, nothing happened. Another, another letdown. Just like the year 2000 also, what a disappointment. This whole Y2K, you know. But we had lots of grains for a long time, so that was good. Anyway, but Prabhupada, right, didn't just leave it at the prediction. Yes, the prediction is there. Prabhupada said, no, now let's make it come true. So, Vishwanath has highlighted, Krishna's main interest is to deliver the conditioned souls. All right, let's get to work. And therefore, hearing and chanting, that's the essence, hearing and chanting. Start hearing, start chanting, but from a bona fide source. Stop hearing all this other rubbish, right? Hear from a bona fide source. Then, very quickly, do not worry, it acts very quickly. So don't be in anxiety, don't think, this is too much trouble. No, it acts very quickly. So in this way, Prabhupada has placed his emphasis in text 36. Okay, that was my summary of these verses. If anyone has a comment. thanks. Yeah, good point. Anyway, we'll come to the coin. We'll go around. One should not whimsically give up his prescribed duties. I'm saying it for the ones in the other room so they can hear. But even if one does not follow all his duties 100%, and one doesn't develop the attraction to... Even if you follow the duties, okay. Now, I have a simple brain, and when the question gets too long, I just go off into the clouds and start thinking of birds and tweet. So, now, try again, a little more condensed, because I'm lost. I'm gone. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yes, life is in the material world is not simple because everything is limited by time, space, and thought, says Yamuna Acharya, and we're experiencing that every day, right? Running out of time, and you know, yesterday I banged my head; that was a space issue, and therefore today I cannot think so well. That's true. Somehow or other, I'm making it. So don't mind that I couldn't follow your question. I'm a little spacey, actually. When it gets too exact, I get lost. Yes, so we are struggling with the material energy and with our limitations here. And then we have all these duties. And, you know, and there are so many, right? I mean, really. If you look at it, gosh, you know, I mean, like it goes on and on and on. So, amongst all those duties, we have to prioritize. You know, to prioritize. And Prabhupada is basically prioritizing here. Just like it is stated that of all the 64 limbs of bhakti in the nectar of devotion, 5 are the most important. And of those 5, the chanting of Hare Krishna is the most important. So one has to know that. Rupa Goswami has explained this, that we must prioritize. So, first chanting Hare Krishna. And then hearing. Because if you don't hear, then it becomes hard to go on chanting Hare Krishna. And then service. And like this. And so many other duties that we have. So one must prioritize. I think that should solve the dilemma, in my mind. At least my personal dilemma is solved in that way. I don't have a dilemma, because I'm very practical about that. You know, some days I just cut corners left and right. You know, some days I just chant 16 rounds and do the rest of my business, because it's one of those days. Yeah? And all the other ideas of, you know, Mangalarti and all these things become secondary to chanting rounds. It's like sometimes even in travels the bath is not possible, and so on. You know, so many injunctions go out the window. Is that what you meant, or you meant something else? No, it's all right. It's not your fault. It's just my capacity to understand is poor. To hear and chant. Okay. All right. I see where you're coming. You're taking duties in the sense of practical duties and hearing and chanting as not as being something else. I took it as hearing and chanting as all part of duties. I saw duties as one, including hearing and chanting, and you're separating them. It's semantics. That's all it is. Okay, I'm with you now. Okay. Practical engagements in devotional service. I like that word better than duties. That's less confusing. Because although hearing and chanting is emphasized, we are not able to chant like Haridas Thakur and also not recommended. See, the Prabhupada explains that, he reads that explanation of the Maha Mantra on the back of the record. And he explains how the mantra, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, penetrates through the through from the subtle to the gross. It goes from the intellectual plane, to the mental plane, to the sensual plane. Remember that? No. Doesn't ring a bell. Okay. So look at your hand. Do some palmistry here. You can see wherever there is redness in the hand, right on the fingers, right? That's where your energy is. If it is at the bottom of the fingers, it is the gross sensual platform. If it is in the middle of the fingers, it's the mental platform. If it's on the top, it's the intellectual platform. If the whole hand is red, it means either you're agitated or maybe you've been sitting on your hands. Okay. So there are these levels, yes, of intellectual, mental, and sensual. Now, we obviously, and then the spiritual platform. And our energy is divided over all these areas. Right? Some of our energy is on the sensual platform. Yum, yum, yum. Right? Some of the energy is rooted there constantly. Every day, a percentage of our energy goes there. Some of our energy is on the mind. You know, I need some time to think, you know what I mean? I'm going nuts in this place. It's just all day activity. There's no time to think. Right? We need the mental space that we wanted, you know, intellectual space, you know what I mean, to understand. So the energy is divided. So Prabhupada explains that when our energy is still on the sensual platform and so on, mental platform, on these other levels, that we cannot just full-time engage in the pure devotional platform by hearing and chanting and remembering. That's not possible at that stage. Because our energy is in the senses, we have to use the senses in the service of Krishna. Because some of our energy is in the mind, we have to use the mind in the service of Krishna. Because we like to scheme and this and that, all right, we have to scheme and this and that for Krishna. Right? And only when it's all completely purified and Krishna has become the main thing, then we can always hear and chant 24 hours a day. Like that. So that's a better answer maybe then. Good. Got it. Last. You're the last one. I'm sorry. Oh yeah, it's not a rainy day. So then today we're not talking about it. That's okay. No, that's the weather forecast, you know. When it rains, every time I'm sitting on the Vyasa Sun and it rains, you can bring it up anytime. But today, no rain. Sorry. Gotta go now. It's too late. It's past nine. I'm a sinner. There's a clock here. I gotta go. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
No rain. Sorry. We'll talk about it. Oh.